Ben, you're boring. You're horrible.
Well, I mean, I feel like...
Wow.
Side tangent there. I just have been feeling that in my soul for a while.
It is season 10, episode 3 of the Whales Are Whales pod. Cast. Hello, Benjamin.
Oh, hello. I never get greeted first. What just happened? Oh, I wasn't ready. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hello, Steven.
Yo, man. What's up?
Hello, Cameron.
What is happening?
Cameron, how does it feel, buddy?
Thank you for asking.
How does it feel?
I'm fine with it.
Wait, I think I missed something.
Getting introduced last.
Yeah, I'm almost always introduced last, so I was asking Cameron how it freaking feels.
He's here every week, so he's had enough first introductions to last him a lifetime.
I'm honestly really glad that we got everyone here together and kind of that we're recording this for posterity, because I have a bit of an announcement to make for Whales Are Whales.
Mm. Oh, dope. Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Yeah. So this has kind of been going on in the background for a while, but I kind of want to get the live reactions here. I sold Whales Are Whales.
My God. Wait. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. That feels like it could be bad. Who did we get sold to?
Don't worry. I vetted them really carefully. They seem up on the up and up. I sold us to Ty Lopez.
Ty Lopez. Yes. That's the knowledge guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of Ferraris in his garage.
I prefer to think of him as the CEO of Radio Shack.
CEO of also Whales Are Whales now. This is not good.
Now, I did ask Mr. Lopez what he was going to do with Whales Are Whales, and he told me that he's going to turn it into a big NFT. One big NFT.
Theoretically, we could make each of our episodes its own NFT, like the link to the episode itself. Like, we could try to sell that. I mean, heck, I would buy it.
NFTs don't have a, you can't make a whole website a NFT.
We can make a link to a website an NFT, which is part of the problem, is because they have dead links all the time.
I was actually just gonna say, how do you assure that NFTs are so stupid?
They are really dumb. So
I'm sorry, my new overlord Ty, but NFTs are dumb, and
all right,
you're
well,
dumb
if we get
for
to vote,
them.
I give it a 4 out of 10.
That's how you're voting?
Yeah, yeah. 4 out of 10, right?
Okay, oh, Brian, what do you vote? Brian, what is your vote?
I was thinking like 6.9.
And Cameron?
I'll give it 4 greens.
4 greens?
Yeah.
You can do better than that.
No, I really think 4 greens. Okay, 4 greens and a red is as high as I can go for this, I think.
Okay. And I give it a 2 out of 10.
Okay.
However, since he is our CEO, Mr. Lopez's vote counts 10 times and give it a 10.
Oh, geez.
So...
of course he likes it. Also, yeah. I mean, doesn't that man sell, like, Get Rich Quick / How to Be a Millionaire courses? Is that what we're going to do now? Like, all right, here on Whales and Whales, we're going to talk about how we can save money.
I want to talk to you about how you can hustle.
Okay, I'm down.
Actually, you should talk to me about how I should hustle. I feel like you're better at it than I am.
All right, how are we hustling? Can we pick, like, any genre in which we want to make money and we can come up with a hustle from there?
Probably. Absolutely. It can be legal or illegal.
Yeah, I mean, illegal, it's just selling drugs. Like, that's the only one that...
Okay, we can start there.
That's a starting point.
Work our way up.
Work our way up from there.
Honestly, most of the other illegal things, like, legality generally aligns with morality. So, like, there's a lot of ones that I think would be
that
morally
That does not
wrong.
Sound very anti-capitalist to me, Ben.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I don't
I feel
know.
Like...
It seems like you sold out. Oh, wait, you literally have.
Yeah, no, I'm owned by Ty Lopez now.
Also, I asked him, and he told me that NFT stands for narcissistic fake thing.
I was hoping it stood for nautical fun time, which is kind of what we're going for.
Oh, my God. We should rename whales to NFT for
nautical fun time.
That's a podcast name
for whale in the Whales Network. Are you kidding me?
Like, do you guys remember when IHOB, like, they're like International House of Breakfast? We could just do it for, like, a season. We could just be like, and Whales Are Whales.
Nautical fun time.
Is nautical fun time just for season 4.
Wait a sec.
Maybe it could be a segment.
Wait a sec. What if the 10-year anniversary episode next year that we do for 8 hours or whatever is that's the NFT episode.
Yes.
Which, we need a nautical fun time.
You're all required to show up.
Isn't our plan for that to like record for 10 hours?
Yes. Yeah, right. 8, 10, stupid. 12, something like that.
And put it on your calendar or something?
I did, actually. Let me see when that was. But you are all required to be there. Not for the whole time.
Are we allowed to like play games during it?
Yeah.
Or do we have like the idea of like a charity live stream, but with no charity and questionable live stream?
No. Anyone who gives us money, I'm happy to give it away to a charity. I just don't think anyone's going to.
There will be Yetis.
It's March 12th, 2025.
We could even have Evan on, which is also a callback to the audio drama.
We could. We could drink coffee. We could have Zach swear at Serious Sam.
I actually do it.
We could also invite Parker. He's been on at least one episode. I'm sorry.
That is true.
Has, yeah.
But if we do this, Steven and Cameron have to be the primary hosts.
That's fine. I'm the one who will be there for the whole time.
This is starting to freak me out a lot, but I'm realizing I do, completely unrelated to Disembodied Voices, I do have a ferret puppet, so
what?
That might be useful.
Why?
That's super, super helpful. Yeah, if we do a video, a video podcast, you could just set up a separate camera for the what is it? Yeah.
Wait, it's not going to be video though. This is useless.
That's even better. That's more video things that aren't on video.
Oh my god!
Oh, sorry, my bad. I was planning on sending you all cameras so that we could
it's amazing how much the drama is becoming reality.
Oh my
so
god! Yeah, he needs the tap dance. You need to make the little tappy sound. That's the
that would work on audio.
Wow, work is a strong word, but
I like that we're doing a live planning session here.
Well, what else do we have to talk about? Really,
not much.
I mean, I could go on and on about, like, games have been amazing this year.
Talk about current events.
Yeah, what current event are we going to talk about?
What do you think about...
We're in the year of the election.
Anything I say after that is bad. What do you, like, there's nothing I can end that sentence with.
What do you think about how long grass has grown? Well, back in my day.
This reminded me of the Watch and Paint Dry.
Oh, that was such a good podcast.
That was a great segment.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, so one of the ideas that I brought to the podcast was, hey, you guys do the first episode of a garbage podcast. And so one of them was watching paint dry as a podcast.
Yep. You, me, and Ben, I think, did it and just improv. It's up there on the Bandcamp.
It's actually pretty
fun. I think Steven edited it and made an okay segment.
No, yeah, Steven made it listenable as opposed to it just being absolutely garbage.
Yeah. As usual.
As usual.
He's really good at that.
You know, like how auto-tune makes you a good singer? Editing makes you a good improver.
I resent that,
actually. We have relied very well. Not you specifically, Cameron. I'm talking the royal you.
Yeah, well, I felt attacked.
No. But, like, our podcast very much relies on editing to make us good improvers.
I think that it does, depending on the segment. I'm speaking out as the biggest believer in Whales Are Whales. So, like, I think that genuinely, like, this is one of the, like, greatest, most wholesome, funny groups, period. And so, like, if you give us a structure, which is, you know, the segments that I tried to do, if you give a structure, we're able to make things just absolutely the most hilarious thing you've ever heard.
We are the Whose Line Is It Anyway of the podcasting world.
Yeah, and then whenever we're being boring, Steven can fix it.
Yes.
So basically,
Cameron,
do
you have a problem with this statement?
I remember several times in the past when we were in the middle of, let's say, story time or some sort of segment, everyone starts to sort of trail off and try to change the subject because it's going so badly. But I would confidently stride into the conversation and say, don't worry, it will be funny. It will be funny the next time you listen to this. Just trust me. I can see through the matrix of humor, and we're going to get there.
But I'm sure
you
there
have
been
the
times
idea of what's going to happen. Sorry, Brian.
I'm sure there are times you've been in the editing room in despair, being like, there's nothing.
I remember once challenging Cameron to this once, doing a sponsor, and I said I can make pretty much anything funny, I believe, and he tried to make the shortest, least funny sponsor possible, and I think it turned out okay. I think it was peanut butter.
Any last thoughts anyone wants to share here before we're gone?
Word, man. This week we're sponsored by peanut butter.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There was a segment I remember where it was just like, I don't remember the topic, but it was like, here's the topic. And then there was this buildup of music and this buildup. And then the person just said, they're dead. And then the music cut immediately. And
I mean, that was really short.
Yeah.
I don't remember the peanut butter
familiar.
One.
I don't remember what it was either.
Weren't we sponsored by air at one point?
Oh, I'm sure we were.
We were sponsored by water.
Yeah. And what is air but water with some different molecules?
Does anyone know by... the acronym for scuba?
Oh, oh my gosh. That
screaming
was
and
so
crying, but air.
Funny, dude. So what we're all saying basically is that Steven is the literal glue that is holding all of us together.
Disagree on that.
Cameron,
one.
You are the glue that gets us to actually show up.
Yeah,
Steven is
no
the thing
joke.
That makes us funny.
So you're saying Cameron is quality, I mean quantity, and I am quality.
Sorry, I was just looking through our sponsor list, so, and Wearblaze Pog Snog is on here.
Wearblaze actually Pog Snog.
Just as a challenge, I would just like to read out our sponsors.
Okay,
we have been sponsored by Coffee Cups, Water, Horror, Mosquitoes, Independent Thought, Amazon, Cameron, Rainbow Colored Knee Pads, Blizzards, Patreon, Online Stopwatch.com, Serta, Improvisation, Tape Players, Carbon Dioxide. A gun, Hats and Hats Incorporated, Squarespace, Frozen Dinners, Pokemon, Silence, Nail Clippings, Barrington Levy's Turning Point, Foam Cleanser, Hooked on Classics 3, Infamil, Mongolian Fleece Mittens, Superior Quality 4-Piece Collapsible Silicon Measuring Cups to Measure Dry and Liquid Ingredients, Urban Fashion Pink CT Pencil with Chrome Trims and Twist Mechanisms from Parker, Vermont Life Magazine, Nostalgia, RandomQuestions.com, PD the Postbox, Ferris, Taco Bell, Nail Clippings Part 2, Messed Up Family Christmas, Existential Angst, Artaholic, Steven disapproves of everyone just a little bit when they drink, Beef, Blue Apron, The Rice is Right, Have a Good Attitude, Sleeping Pills, Lack of Enthusiasm, Word Association, Telling Compelling Stories, AOL, our biggest sponsor, Indecision, Peanut Butter, Hummus, and Kelp, Learn the Language, and Aware Blaze Pogsnog.
That's genuinely amazing. Like, there are some big names in there. Like, apparently, you said we had Blue Apron as a sponsor. Was that just an apron that is
Amazon?
Amazon was one. Yeah, Serta. Like, that was one of our earliest ones. I think I looked down and saw a pillow on my bed and was like, Serta.
Yeah. We have had 55 sponsors over the years.
Wow. How much money have we made?
Anyway, on to the next topic. How are you doing, Cameron?
I'm all right today.
All right.
I'm feeling a little under the mental weather for a couple of various reasons, but I have been incredibly social the past couple of weeks, and so I think it's catching up to me, and I'm very tired. But it's been a good couple of weeks, so I can't really complain. I'm not complaining. It's been a very good few weeks.
What has been making it so good?
Mostly just the video games that I've been playing with my friends together with. And by video games, I mean video game. And by video game, I mean Helldivers 2. I have been literally all of my friends are playing Helldivers 2. And I mean that
That's never happened.
No, never
that's
before.
Never happened.
Every single one of my different friend groups and every single one of the people in those friend groups are playing Helldivers 2.
Or are thinking about it.
Or will be soon, yes.
With Ben now also jumping on board, that kind of just...
Oh my god, I'm so excited. This is the perfect type of game. It's a social game where you also show skill and you're relying on each other and communicating. Yep. Like, this is my type of game. I'm here for it.
Great. I am so excited to play it with you. It is so good.
It does a lot of things incredibly right, and I think one of the big ones for me has been the social aspect of it, because everybody, it reminds me of is when Pokemon Go exploded, how literally you would turn except of course you're not outside with Helldivers, but when you turn any amount of corners and someone was playing it or talking about it. With Helldivers, it's the same thing. All my friends are talking about it, playing it in different ways. I play with you and Parker, Brian, and it's like this incredibly intense, like ridiculous showdown of super hard difficulty. And then I go play with two different friends, and they like to take it easy and play the easier missions and just relax and chat. And then everybody has a different way to play it, but it's always fun and it's always exciting no matter what you're doing.
This game has taken on some sort of like mythical quality for me because it came out of absolutely nowhere. Yep. Suddenly everyone was saying the words Helldivers 2. I didn't even really know what Helldivers 1 was. Mm-hmm. And everybody is raving about it. Like, and they can't even really explain why. It's like, well, you see, it's a multiplayer PvE sci-fi game. It's like, okay? Like, sure, I don't... Adding to that mystery, I haven't seen any gameplay.
Oh, wow.
Like, I haven't seen anything. Only stories from other
people. I did
not
know that.
I'm in that same boat, Steven, where like I've barely seen anything about it, but I did play Helldivers 1. And the idea of like the complicated inputs, the working together. It's the type of game that I enjoy, yeah, not because of the skill required, but because it requires you to play with teammates and communicate. Yeah. It's a social game. It's a beautiful social game, and those are the ones that take over the cultural zeitgeist and just consume everyone. That's what happened with...
People are social creatures. And
exactly. We love playing
with
people.
What makes it work so well, and what they... I don't know if it was intentional or they just, you know, stumbled upon it, is it doesn't just have the social of, when you work together, it goes well. It has the, in addition to the carrot, it has the stick of, if you don't communicate, you murder each other. And it's like, that's just as good.
And
yeah,
or if you stand in the wrong spot, or if you stand in the wrong spot, you just like, you die to a thing that someone called down. Like, there's enough humor in it as well, where you get to laugh about it. And so, like, even watching it as a spectator sport, it's so much fun. So, like, again, I haven't gotten to play it, and I love it.
The other night where I called down my heavy weapon, I called down my machine gun, and Parker ran up to it, took it, stared me in the eyes, then melee attacked me and murdered me in one hit. All by accident. And he was, like, apologizing to me for the next, like, 5 minutes. Yeah, but it was so hilarious.
Say, like, that doesn't sound like a Parker move. And then it's like...
No. Oh. And he was just like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And it was just the funniest thing.
The game is a
playground.
Except
the thing he did later, which is even funnier.
But right. That's literally what I was about to say. This game is so amazingly good at creating moments out of thin air. It reminds me of the emergent gameplay in Breath of the Wild, but on a multiplayer scale, where it gives you a relatively basic board game to play with, but the board game is set up in just the right way, where things can happen, and they're all funny things. Nothing that happens in that game that isn't awesome or funny in some way. Yeah. Like, there's no boring. You don't drop into a mission and it's boring ever.
Yeah, no,
it's a playground.
Everything is just. And playground is a great point because it feels like you're, like, I don't know, you're a kid with your three other friends running around the playground just playing pretend. And it's that same sense of just, like, exuberant joy of just, like, running into challenges, trying to overcome them, getting in fights with each other. And just, like, the whole thing feels like this over-the-top action movie with lasers and explosions flying everywhere that look amazing.
The production
values
are wild.
So it just gets you into this mindset of just... pure fun.
You know, that kind of, this is a bit of a sidestep, but the way you explain that begs a different question for me, which is, what games did you guys play outside when you were kids?
Oh, man. That's a wonderful question, because, like, I grew up on basically a farm. Whenever we had friends over, like, we would play thousands of game outside. Like, that has my brain firing in all directions.
Yeah, the main, when I was really little, we played Pokemon a lot. Two people were the trainer, two people were the Pokemon, and we'd have imaginary fights. And that was real young, of course. When I was a little older into the teenage years, it would be Manhunt, which is basically just tag, or it was hide and seek tag combined, and you only played it in the dark. So you would you'd go down to the athletic field and everyone would go hide, and then the one person would, and these were like real hiding spots. Like, oh, we climbed to the top of the roof of the building and was hiding up there. You know, like,
This is Kentucky memories. You're a teenager, right?
Yes, so correct.
That was a good place to play games like this.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. So many nights, literally 3 a.m., freezing my butt off, hiding in the top rafters of the baseball dugout, you know, like, just very fun, exciting, like, it's suspense games, basically.
I was a very patient hider when it came to games like hide and seek.
I was not. I would start to call out to people and be like make like owl and like when they would get near me to try to get them to, because then once you were found, you'd get chased. You'd have to catch them too. That was a later game for sure. That was so much fun.
When we first moved to Houston, there was a and we were homeschooling at that point. There was another homeschool family that lived, like, in walking distance from our house.
Like, one street
down. Literally one street down. And that definitely became our just outside play, because we were both, you know, home at the same times. And so we would just play outside with them all the time the first few years we were in Houston. Capture the flag. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was
with,
a big
with
one.
With four people?
It wasn't just four. They had four brothers.
There were two of us. And,
I mean, that's enough to play Capture the Flag. Absolutely. For me, like, the ones that come to mind whenever you mention stuff like that is that we took just enough information from video games that we had played, and we would run out into the field and then just completely imagine like a network maze of underground tunnels or like a cityscape, and then we would describe what powers we had or what artifacts gave us the powers. Like, I remember playing Tai the Tasmanian Devil from the PS2, and in that game he has like 1,000 different boomerangs, and they're like elemental, and so we would like, we took that information. We were like, yeah, our weapons are elemental boomerangs. This one's a flower ring, and it builds flowers wherever it flies past. Yeah. And like, we just built entire like RPG sessions, which is I think part of what drove me to D&D and other tabletop games.
That's very imaginative. Wow.
We
were like Pokemon Go and Pikachu. Like, that was our games. You guys are inventing RPGs. That's crazy.
Well, yeah,
we were like actually.
Continue, Ben.
I was just gonna say, we actively like tracked stats and stuff. It's like, right, this is a plus two. This whole thing is a 16. Do you think we can beat it as a party of four that all have plus two, right? And like, we were like doing math. Oh, it was so fun.
Math is so fun. Sorry, I'm still bitter about that. Well, what that just reminded me of was combining those things is Brian and I had like an imaginary Pokemon game when we were kids as well, and we would, as we collected, it was basically just like what we're doing with Atlas right now, our tabletop game, where we're just telling stories, but it was all Pokemon based. So, you know, we would have our own like lists of Pokemon we were slowly collecting, but then they would all have personalities and like some amount of backstory.
We had that old manual of the 151 Pokemon that we used as reference. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. But not as fun as Helldivers.
What was the connection, Stephen, of just thinking about how Helldivers being a playground?
Yeah, well, Brian said it was like, like being a kid,
playing
around
kids. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, to pull it all back, we're going to play Helldivers tonight, Stephen?
Maybe not tonight, but very soon, I should hope.
Not waiting until next Thursday when we do. Hold on, I have to remove my pop filter for this.
Oh, it didn't work.
Still didn't come through.
Bummer. Work. Well, anyways, the next Thursday, we're going to play before then, right?
Yeah, I will. Maybe, I don't know.
Okay, well, that was pretty noncommittal. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that is Steven. The best you're going to get from me.
Okay, that sounds good. That's okay. Yeah. I have other things to play as well, so it's fine.
How has your last couple weeks been?
It's been ups and downs, just normal flow of life. I'm getting back in toward the busy season, so I'm working way more. But again, they're longer days, but less of them. So the last 3 days I've worked like 14 to 16 hours. And then I'm off for like 4 or 5 days in a row. But the thing that's most recently captivated my attention is Magic the Gathering. We don't have to talk about it, but like, I've found the most ridiculous cards and silly synergies. And I've not felt this excited about a game period since like Hearthstone. Like maybe Teamfight Tactics when it first came out. But I haven't been this excited and spent this much mental energy outside of the game thinking about it in years.
I've not thought to recommend Magic to you, but in hindsight, it makes perfect sense the way that you want to play games, which is just making ridiculous combos.
Magic, absolutely.
No game has matched Magic. They always try to be more competitive, and they back off from the true ridiculousness of how open-ended that deck building is.
Yeah, and this game has been around since, like, what, the 80s? Like, yeah. It's silly. 70s, like some of the cards that they built at the very beginning are silly. Like, my favorite most recent card is you turn yourself into a card and you put your deck on top of your head. And when you draw yourself, you win the game.
Yes.
It's like the most ridiculous.
Ridiculous sets. I forget the name of them. They were like Unhinged or something. Like, they were literally like April Fool's joke sets that they released.
I mean, most recently it's been Lord of the Rings and... not to date this episode, the Doctor Who series, upcoming.
We've got the rules were like literally they weren't. No one was going to play them in tournaments because they were like literally joke cards. Some of the cards
you put stickers on them, and then the card says like based on what stickers are on this card, this thing happens. It's ridiculous. Yes. And so anyway, like
Unhinged. That was the name
absolutely unhinged, and you know in the best way possible. And it's a social game, which like. Right up my alley.
Yeah, who are you playing with? Like, are you going to a card shop or did you?
So my roommate and I will play 1v1, but there is a relatively new card shop that opened up near me. I have no idea how long they'll last. And then there's like a really established one here in Charlottesville that they've been around for like 12 plus years, and they have Commander Nights once a week. And so between the two shops plus my roommate, my boss will host 4-person Magic Nights, and like I get a ton of time to play, way more than I thought I would, which is part of what's been inspiring me to build decks and spend energy on it.
Nice.
Cool. Came out in 93, by the way. You guys, just so you know.
Oh, the 80s? Oh, okay. So
93, yeah.
Early 90s, not late 80s. My bad.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, Brian said 70s. I had to correct Brian specifically. He said 70s. That's what I was correcting.
Just disco and magic in the 70s, you know.
Yeah. That's where the horrible-looking backs come from. So you did say something interesting, though, when you were talking about magic. You said you were not going to buy packs. You were going to buy individual cards where you wanted to build your deck. So that begs two questions. The first one is, you guys aren't playing Standard, clearly.
No, we're explicitly playing Commander, which is 100 cards. Every card has to be different. And so you buy just the individual card. And you do 60 of them because you're playing with lands. So you buy like 50 right. some odd 60 cards, and then you're good to go. And most of those cards are worth in between 5 and 50 cents if you're trying to be get a deal out of it, which of course I am.
So you guys are playing with any card ever made, or
so Commander as a format actually has an official rule set from Wizards of the Coast.
Got it.
And that's the one that we're working by. So any of the events that we go to are actually Wizards of the Coast sanctioned at these game stores.
Oh.
And you get like official rewards from the game store through Wizards of the Coast, through the game store, from the whatever.
Right.
but yeah, it's like your deck has to be Commander legal, which only gets rid of like the most ridiculous cards that we were describing earlier.
Right.
Like I'm still having fun, but just with silly rules and crazy combos.
There's still a lot of crazy things you can do that are not with banned cards. And then my other question was, so the aspect of buying and collecting the cards and like with random packs and the chance of a good value pull is not interesting to you?
No, it absolutely is, which is part of why I'm swearing off it.
It's
the Overwatch thing where it's like, oh, I could own all these skins if I just paid money and opened these loot boxes. Maybe I'll get it. That would be great. And like, no, like I'm not partaking in a system that is built on the fact that humans are super susceptible to Skinner boxes. That's not a thing.
Totally. Because if I had infinite money, I would spend so much money on Pokemon cards. Me and my cousin recently... He's down from Alaska, and he stayed the night at my house, and so we decided to go out. We were going to go bowling, but we decided we didn't really want to do that, and so instead of spending the money on bowling, we spent that money on Pokemon cards. And we got two really good pulls.
So much fun. Do you know what they were? Like, do you remember them?
Yeah. So, because we're going to get them graded, because they're worth like 30 bucks a piece. He got a full... So we bought from the Scarlet and Violet pack that are remakes... Not remakes, but they are of the original 151. They're like throwback cards, but they're not like remakes of the original cards. They're brand new art and everything. So he pulled a full art Charmander, and it's absolutely phenomenal looking. I'll have to actually post it in chat because it's gorgeous art, and it's worth $35. And if we grade it, it's gonna be worth like $100. Then I pulled a full art Mew that is also gorgeous and beautiful, and it's worth about $25.
Yeah, you guys really pulled, like, of the 151, those, like, you didn't pull a Caterpie or a Rhyhorn? Like, good job.
So I also pulled a full art Caterpie, which is worth $12, I think.
That's amazing.
Those were, like, the three big hits, because apparently the full art cards are the ones that are most valuable. And so we thought it'd be fun. We're going to pay, like, $15 a card to get them... graded and slabbed, yeah, and put in a slab, and then they'll be worth like triple of what they're already worth. We just thought
if you're planning
kind of
to hold on
thing.
To them or display them, like, are they going to be a decorative piece? Are they going to be an investment? Like, what are these to you?
To him, he got the Charmander. To him, the Charmander he's going to keep forever. It's an amazing looking card. It's like one of the coolest looking arts I've seen in Pokemon. Cool. For me, I already have my. I don't know if I've ever showed you but I have. Like the majority of the holo original 1999 151 cards.
Every time you would send me a picture of that project, I couldn't stop myself. Just my brain would light up in nostalgic joy. Like, I love looking at Pokemon cards. It's just in my DNA.
And did I show you, Steven, the art where I put them in a frame on my wall?
No.
Oh, darn. Okay, well, I'm going to have this
in
that.
I'm excited to see this. And also, like, I love the original 151 is just small enough that we can memorize all of them and have emotional connections to them we played with them. Yeah, exactly. That's what, like, Brian and Steven were talking about earlier, where, like, that number is completely handleable as opposed to the literally we're over 1,000 Pokemon now, and I only have emotional connections to maybe, like, 30 or 40 of them as opposed to the entire collection.
You know what? That is a point I have never thought about before. And this is coming from somebody who has been playing Pokemon ever since the original, you know. It's not like I took a break or anything. Maybe the newest stuff. But, like, I was on the ground floor with all of, with everything from up to, like, Gen 6. But you're right. I only really have enough memory in my banks to empathize and like the first, I would say the first two generations for me, because it's 250 or so. But after that, I just can't. It's not even these are bad designs. It's like, they're fine. They're fine designs. But I just don't think I have the mental capacity to keep that many in my brain, essentially. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, so you just posted this picture, and just like that, I could just feel all of my Sims meter just going. I had to go to the bathroom less now that I looked at this afters.
Yeah, really, really proud of what I did with that. It's not all of the holos. I didn't have a big enough frame, but I could add on some more stuff. Oh, and I also bought pack wrappers from the original sets. Like, I didn't buy a full pack, because the packs are, like, if you wanted a full base Pokemon pack, it's like $500 for one pack. But I bought the empty wrappers, which I will now post as well, because I just thought that was also really cool, because I opened so many of those when I was a kid. There they are.
They sell the wrappers? Oh, that, wow. Because, like, whenever I opened a pack, I just tear it apart. I wouldn't have even considered to save it. That's amazing.
Yeah, somebody just had probably got them stuck in a cabinet or something for 20 years, and then just like, oh, I wonder if I bought it. They're like $5 a piece, you know,
it,
whatever.
It is, like, amazing how much this stuff lodges in the brain. Like, I'm now remembering distinctly being in the parking lot of our neighborhood clubhouse, opening up packs, and being disappointed that I got, like, 3 Tauruses. Like, I don't need another Taurus.
We had so many Tauruses.
But we did. They were uncommon.
I mean, that's what's crazy to me is, like, as a dad, like, Saunders is gonna have wildly different experiences with that. Like, maybe some of them are Pokemon, but he's talking about, like, none of the 151. He's talking about the ones that came out in generation, like, 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, he's gonna have wildly different memories about, like, what he remembers. Like, it might be Paw Patrol for all I know.
Yeah, I've done a lot of reflection as to, you know, how do I want to tackle this subject? We grew up in a very specific time, and we have very specific memories, and we associate nostalgia and love and, you know, and our childhood with these kind of things, these old Pokemon cards, and it's always different every generation, you know? And there's, and I see a lot of people disparaging. Like, I get sick of even just talking about Pokemon. People are being like, well, the newer generation Pokemon sucks. I'm talking about the design. The games are a different story. I'm talking about the design of the Pokemon. And I don't agree with that. I think they're all great, and I think the designs have always been good. And for somebody like Saunders' age, the Gen 8 and Gen 9 are as good as the original 151. It doesn't. They're just, they're Pokemon.
I agree,
you know?
And I also disagree with you, because, like, I definitely think that everyone has a different, like, childhood nostalgia experience. Like, I listened to a podcast with people who grew up in the 80s, and so they're always talking about, like, G.I. Joes and, you know, any Nintendo Power covers for the NES.
Oh,
they're never
cool.
talking about Pokemon, because that wasn't their thing. But that said, I do find a trend that action figures and kid toys for kids tend to, the same product line over time gets worse designs because they don't have the simple purity that the original did. So, like, original Bionicle was fantastic, and it got worse over time. Like, even original Star Wars toys or something like that, like, the more they kind of bolted onto them and added to them, they got worse over time. So it's not that you didn't have great lines from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, etc., but I find most
the quality of most designs degrade over time for lines, at least from what I've noticed.
No, yeah. Like anecdotally, that tracks for me. Like it feels like every show, like they have to up the power level. It's power creep, but in social terms,
right?
I don't necessarily disagree with that. Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree. I do think that,
but I agree about the curmudgeonly. Just if it wasn't from my childhood, it's worse. That's dumb.
Oh, right.
Like everyone's gonna have their cool things.
Totally.
From childhood.
There's definitely two different topics there, essentially. And I agree with you for sure. I just think it is a soft spot for me with Pokemon because as I got older, it's so funny how much this comes up when we talk to Parker about, you know, new, bad, old, good. But as I've gotten older in the past 5 or so years, I have really made myself not dislike new things. And Pokemon was one of the first things that I stopped disliking the new Pokemon of. You know what I mean? Like, I just said, these aren't bad.
There are
designs.
Still good designs to find out.
Totally.
There.
Like, and there was bad designs in the 151. Yeah. One of them was a Pokemon.
No, there weren't.
Yes, there was.
I'm sticking
Voltorb
by the perfection
stupidest
of Mr. Mime, Jinx, and XMQ.
Wow, you literally listed the three that I was going to point at and be like, hey, these
Jinx
are bad. You
forever. All I remember about Jinx is that's the card I got a bunch of power bar stuck on. And so it was out all this brown residue that wouldn't come off.
Power bars? Like the candy?
Power bars.
They're like kind of cliff bar things.
Oh. Kind of cliff bar like things.
Yeah, okay. I understand the imagery now. Got it. things have always been bad and will always be bad. And things have always been good and will always be good is kind of where I ended up at.
So are you going to admit all music before the 80s wasn't bad?
Nope. It was all terrible and I hate jazz.
All right. So Cameron still has some work to do, but we'll get there.
I'm growing, man. It's taking a while.
Yeah.
And now it's time
first
for our
move forward in the timeline. Next, we can move you backwards in the timeline.
Yes. I'm doing good with new stuff. I'm doing really bad with old stuff.
Yeah. Right. We'll get there.
Yeah. Next time, what, Steven?
Oh, I was going to say it was time for our segment.
Oh, what's the segment?
Rank all Pokemon.
So, all right. Sounds
the
good.
The best one is Dodo.
If anyone says Charizard for the best Pokemon, I'm going to lose my absolute mind.
Wait, are we talking in the original 151?
No,
or are we talking about all Pokemon?
Every single one.
Honchkrow is the best Pokemon.
So Cameron, Parker, and I actually, because we were talking a lot about Pokemon designs, and I suggested jokingly, we should make a tier list of every single Pokemon.
You shouldn't have said that.
Which I'm like, wait, I'm dealing with two obsessive people. They're going to take me seriously. And Parker's like, sure. And I'm like, no. All right, let's do just the starter Pokemon. And Parker's like, the starters and their evolutions. And I'm like, no. I am going to do only the starter Pokemon, but I will do a tier list of those.
Okay,
that was kind of fun.
What ended up on top? Did you have like a particular leaning toward fire starter of fire, water, grass?
That's a good question about element. We are thinking more generation than element, but
who was the one that I liked from Pokemon X and Y? It was a really good one in that.
We found one of the generations in particular was terrible. I think it was the one with the pig.
Tepig?
Oh,
yeah.
I like
Tepig. No one really liked
Tepig.
I think the same generation.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, and this was including, my list was including the Eevee and Pikachu from the Let's Play game.
Oh, wow.
So I think like Eevee, Pikachu, Squirtle, and one others were at my very top tier.
Torchic was biased towards
the first generation.
Blaziken is my favorite of all time.
The problem with Blaziken is that it's up against Empoleon, and as a steel water, one of the first of its kind, it's a fucking powerhouse. Torchic is great, Blaziken's great, but like Empoleon's better.
I disagree with that entirely.
Wait,
Blaziken is the coolest looking Pokemon.
Wait, which one are we talking about?
I have a thing for water starters.
38 minutes
Charizard
is when Ben said a curse word. Well, go ahead, whoever's editing.
I didn't even hear that.
Do we still do that?
I don't know.
Do we still do that?
I think the best one is Squirtle.
Sorry, you said Blaziken was up against two, Ben?
It's either Swampert and Empoleon, and it
what is the Empoleon thing?
Empoleon is such a strong Pokemon. It's
really
the stupidest looking
Parker
Pokemon
like
I've
had
ever
his
seen
tier list and had Empoleon in SSS tier alone.
Who's Empoleon?
Parker is right. It's a steel water penguin.
I don't care
Pokemon
how strong he is. He's the stupidest looking Pokemon I've ever seen. I posted in the insane chat.
Hold on. Have you seen Have you seen the 7 and 8 water starters? One of them is a sniper. The other is a seal in a circus. I hate both of them with
all
my heart.
I'm not arguing for them. I'm arguing for Blaziken. He's way cooler than this dumb emperor penguin.
Are they trying to make him
Blaziken is boring.
You're boring, Ben. You're boring. You're
all right.
Horrible.
I'm just coming in here. I'm looking at
this is what it turned into.
I'm looking at
that's
a picture
what you
of
get
all
for
the
asking
starters.
Us to rank all Pokemon.
This is
I'm
what
just
was,
wondering,
yeah.
are they trying to make Empoleon look like Napoleon?
I don't think
he's
so.
He's an Emperor Penguin.
He's an Emperor.
There's nothing interesting about this fire chicken.
But he kind of looks like he's in a
look
suit
at his awesome hair. Look at like his awesome hair and his cool pose and his V on his eyebrows.
No, camera, this is a dumb Pokemon.
I don't like Blaziken. I don't like Blaziken at all.
You guys are insane.
I'm objectively the first two generations are the best. Like objectively.
Okay, you're so wrong. Question, did you ever look at the mega evolutions of Swampert and Charizard X and Y?
No, I haven't been actually.
I'm just curious because my son is convinced that Swampert and Charizard have four evolutions because of the mega evolution.
I mean, he's not wrong. It's another evolution. It's very Digimon in that sense, where they just keep on going.
We're spending this much time talking about Pokemon. I didn't think this was something that.
Well, I'm just extremely angry, so I want to keep on yelling.
My S tier was Squirtle, Eevee, and Torchic.
Torchic is great.
Yeah. So everyone agrees with my opinion, so we won't get mad about those.
I like
Sprigatoli. Sprigatoli is also amazing, and you guys better not say anything bad about Sprigatoli.
Is that the bipedal cat?
No, the original, the first evolution is the kitty, the green kitty cat.
Yeah, green kitty. Mm. Yeah, who's gonna hate on the
green
kitty?
Exactly. Here, I'll send a picture of the green kitty cat. Here's the green kitty cat. She's amazing.
I'm not looking
at a
green kitty cat.
For our audio listeners, look up Sprigatoli Pokemon.
Oh yeah, no, that's a good one.
Oh, it's not Sprigatoli. It's Sprigatito.
Sprigatito, whatever it is.
Whatever.
Yeah, for some reason she didn't make it to my tier list. I don't know why. I think it is she the newest.
She's the newest. Yeah.
For some reason, mine was missing a couple from those. But yeah,
Scarlet Violet. She has a move. Her signature move is that it guarantees crit, which is so cool.
Yeah, it's really strong. The evolutions are okay. They go bipedal, which is really frustrating. But whatever.
I think we made Parker actually upset with how much we dunked on Empoleon. But
really,
I'll have to let him
know
that
he's right. He probably has Empoleon next, like somewhere near Swampert, and the two are just okay. I need to talk to him instead of talking on this podcast.
We can change the subject. Let's talk about something else.
I agree with that. Pokemon bring only nightmares. Also, I have to bring up
what the heck
it wasn't
was
a starter
that?
Pokemon, but one of my favorite Pokemon ever, who is not from the original generation, was Wailord.
Wailord?
You don't like Wailord?
I love Wailord.
Oh, I was about to say that Wailord is Zach's favorite of the 151.
Oh yeah.
Wait,
I forgot about
Wailord is
not
in the 151. He's in the 250.
All right, sorry, 250. Wailord is one of Zach's favorite.
Wait a sec. Wailord is Gen 3, I think.
Whatever. It's the heaviest Pokemon. It's biggest. I don't care where it came from. Zach liked it. That's the only thing I'm calling out.
Something we definitely learned is that Cameron knew by far the most about what Pokemon is from what generation.
Yeah, it is Gen 3. I was right.
Yeah, he is well informed.
Yeah,
I skipped a couple of generations of Pokemon. I skipped Sun and Moon, and I skipped Sword and Shield. But I got
did
back
you skip
on it
Black
with
Black and White.
I did not skip Black and White. No, okay. I played, but I did not play Black and White 2. I should say I did play 1, which is very weird. There is some part of me that will never not love Pokemon, even when I'm playing Scarlet and Violet, which is the most unbelievably broken garbage game I've ever played. I still had such a good
especially
time.
Especially after Palworld, comparatively, like I wish the Pokemon Company would take better use of the hardware. Yeah. Maybe it's the Switch 2. Who knows? I'm just repeating the pop culture talking points.
Well, no, you're not. I play both of them now. I have like 15 hours or whatever in Palworld, and it's funny to me that even as janky and unfinished as Palworld is, it runs and looks better than Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. Like it Pokemon Company or Game Freak need to get it together, basically. They need to figure it out because they're 15 million copies of Power World sold. Like, that's catching up with Pokemon numbers. Like, that's crazy to me. And I don't care what you think about Power World. The fact is, it sold 15 million copies, and that's how much Pokemon Gold sold or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of people. So clearly, the desire is there for a better Pokemon game, and Game Freak are not delivering. Sorry, side tangent there. I just have been feeling that in my soul for a while now.
Yeah, you had to get... And we sort of, like, gave you the on-ramp by revving you up and getting you really mad about Pokemon. So then you can deliver your soapbox speech, which I think has merit.
Thank you, Steven. I appreciate
Cameron,
it.
Cameron, to be clear, I don't actually think Blaze Against that bad. I just really wanted to hear that rant of yours.
and Emperor Dumb Penguin is only kind of dumb, so it's fine.
You know what? Great. I'll take it. Do I get to rant now?
Sure.
No, I have no Pokemon rants aside from, like, Pokemon Gold Go to the Polls was dumb and I didn't like it.
Pokemon Go to the Polls. It was Hillary Clinton.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
It
at
was
all.
She was running against Trump, and it was, the Pokemon Go came out right in 2016, and she said Pokemon Go to the Polls or whatever.
Oh,
I think that's slightly better than trying to shove Ron Paul's name into the Pokemon theme song.
I forgot about that. Wait, that happened?
The original singer was a Ron Paul fan, so he did a remake of it where he's singing Ron Paul instead of Pokemon.
I hate Ron
Paul,
that.
Gotta catch him up.
Yeah. It was pretty silly.
That's horrible.
That exists somewhere still.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure I can find it.
It's the internet.
Well, yeah. That's a good point. Well...
Everything you guys have recorded for the past 10 years lives here forever.
I bet you there's a Disembodied Voices episode that's gone forever.
Yeah, there's probably... We missed a spot somewhere, right?
Like, yeah.
Someone forgot to send their file in, someone edited it and lost it on a hard drive, laptop hard drive.
Wow, what the heck was that?
Happened? I just, my Cydia's didn't work, so I just tried to reset it several times.
Oh, but
it's hard drive.
It didn't even change each time. Do you guys ever get, what's the term for be fearful that something will go away without you experiencing it?
You're missing out kind of thing?
No, what are they, I mean, kind of, but what do they use, like, in games where they, FOMO, that's not it, dang it, what's the term?
It's the fact that it's a limited resource and it might not be back. Yeah, it's related to FOMO, I'm hearing.
What the heck is the
term,
though?
Are you talking about in real life, Cameron?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, well, if I can think of the stinking term, my question was, I've totally lost my question now because I can't remember what
hard drive.
Oh,
hard drive.
God. Fear of missing out.
Do you
okay.
experience FOMO in life, in real life?
Well, okay. So, for example, I get really bad FOMO in real life in weird, silly ways where, like, okay, just for example, we were walking down the beach the other day, me and my dad, and we were looking for rocks for my grandma. Because she can't get on the beach, so we were going to bring her some rocks back. And my dad found a pretty cool-looking rock, and he was like, oh, here, check it out. This is pretty cool. It's like petrified wood. And I was like, oh, that's neat. And so I grabbed it, and then we found a better rock, and he was like, oh, let's give this one to her instead. And so for a split second before I threw the first rock, I thought, if I throw this rock, I will never see this rock again. It will be gone forever. There is no chance of me finding it literally ever again. And
it's a rotating shop.
No, it's not. This is not a video game. It just was like, and it didn't stop me from doing it, and so I threw it in the ocean. But it did give me a pause, and I realized that happens to me a lot, where something minuscule. It was the same way with these Pokemon card packs. Like someday, the wrappers for the cards I used to buy will be gone forever, and I will never be able to get them. So I wanted to get them now. Do you guys experience this in such a small scale like I do sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes my brain will wander in that direction. It reminds me of a quote that is very simple, but I think of constantly, which is, this day will not come again.
Right.
Like, whatever you're doing today, in its specific and infinitely intricate configuration, you will never see again. Could be good day, could be bad day, probably is both. But it's gone. Like, this is the one chance you will ever have to really be in this moment and experience it. Which is sort of a Both the deeply comforting and challenging thought at the same time. Yeah. So I guess you could really apply that to rocks you find on the beach, or you could apply it to a concert, or you could apply it to the perfect bowl of oatmeal that you made this morning.
So I actually do experience this kind of all the time, especially as I exited high school when I knew I'd be moving across the country. I did like my last play, and I knew it was going to be my last play. I had like the last week that I worked at a camp. Like, there's a lot of times where it's like, oh, yeah, this is the last of my last soccer game. It was like, this is the last time I'm ever going to be this age doing this thing. But now it's extended and taken on a different meaning, because for Sonder, I don't know when it is, but there will be a last time that I ever pick him up. Mm-hmm. There will be a last time that he ever goes out to play with friends. Right. And that I experienced that. He's going to experience that. It feels part of the human nature. And like, for me, I guess I don't give it a whole lot of energy, but I do give it the melancholy and weight that it deserves. But, like, I'm not sad about it. I don't mourn it. It's just like, yeah, at some point, I went out, I logged off of Xbox Live for the last time, said goodnight to my friends, and didn't ever speak to them again. And that was, like, a huge part of my life at one point. And I don't know. Like, I guess I'm not that concerned about it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head where you said concerts, Stephen, because I guess I have I'm more sensitive to this than most people, because I will literally, in the middle of a concert, start to get scared of the concert being over, because I will have to stop experiencing the concert at some point, and it'll actually diminish my feelings, and I have to like get out of my own brain to enjoy the concert in the moment. And
I've gotten to that point, you're thinking about the concert, you're not being in the concert.
100%, yes. Like trying to commit, and that's also why I stopped recording my concerts, like with video. I take pictures now, but like I don't get video, because then I would watch them again to try to recapture that moment, and then I would only remember the video of it, not the actual concert. And so yeah, and you're right, Ben. Having a kid, I feel like we really amplify that, because now you're getting to experience their last time through them. Which sounds even more scary and horrible.
But it can also be fun. Like the last time that they believed in Santa, or like there are fun ways to it, and like magical ways. Like back when you were a kid, you remember the lack of stress because life was just like okay, and you didn't have to concern yourself. And so seeing him just like the biggest problem in his life is that he ran out of gummies. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially because when your kid stops believing in Santa, that means they start having deeper critical thought. So it's like, it's something is changing. You know, nothing is created or destroyed. Like something is changing into something else. And I really felt that recently when our uncle, Brian Meads, our uncle dug up these old home videos and sent them to our mom. So when he went over to our parents for dinner, she put it up on the TV. And it was like this quintessential Thanksgiving dinner at our grandmother's place. And I hadn't seen, I guess I haven't seen this footage ever. And it's when I was, I don't know, would you say maybe 9 or so? Yeah, probably around
maybe
9.
Maybe 11.
Wow, that's
maybe
that's
9 or 10,
really
somewhere
cool.
around there. And I was just watching me doing things I didn't remember doing, and yet things that are very plausible for me to do.
Oh yeah.
And just having this feeling of like, that person doesn't exist anymore. He didn't die, but he's also sitting on this couch watching himself, and I'm just like, what is existence?
I don't know how I would feel about watching. I don't even know if we have any old video. I mean, I have video from like 2000s, but nothing from the 90s. I don't think so anyways. Mm-hmm. And I guess it boils down for me that whenever I think back, Ben, you mentioned it, the melancholy of it all has a negative connotation for me, because I feel like life was better back then. And maybe that's where my sensitivity is coming from.
Okay.
Is that I look back on the incredible times and wish that it was still incredible. And especially 5 years ago when I was not feeling good in modern life, I felt that really bad. But I think as I've grown and gotten better over the past couple of years, I've tamped down. Nostalgia no longer is depressing when I think about it. It's now just a thing. But I still have those weird tendencies to like to anthropomorphize a rock. You know what I mean? They still pop up.
Yeah.
I it's kind of a tangent, but someday, Stephen and Brian, I would love to see video or hear. You know what I'd love to hear? I'd love to hear audio of you guys as kids. I think that would be awesome. I want to hear you guys do a podcast when you're 10 or whatever.
I want to listen
for your guys' voice.
Yeah, I mean, our uncle made a YouTube channel, so I might just be able to send you the link.
It's on YouTube. Yeah.
That's wild. See, for me, having come from a fairly large family, there's when it comes to like memory and family tradition and stuff, I've found in life that you can store memories in physical locations, physical objects, and other people. So like, oh, this bear reminds me, or this bike reminds me of Christmas, blah, blah, blah. This location, I remember being small in the living room opening Christmas presents, or one of my older sisters being like, hey, do you remember when we went to this place and did this thing and it meant this to us and this is the emotions that we experienced? And it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, I wouldn't have thought to think of that. And you've dredged up something that I didn't even know was still there. Thank you for doing that. And so like, for me, that's the beauty of like family and both and history together. Like, it's just, oh, it's so cool.
Pets are really good for that.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
We lost the last of our Kentucky cat in 2018, I think. And I think back and I realize that cat, Boo Boo Kitty, in 2018, he knew the cat that was born in 1992.
Right.
Because we had Hobbs in 92, who lived until 2004. And Boo was born in 2004. So those two cats met. And so in 2018, literally like 27 years later, he was a relic of our family who had been with us for so long and had so many memories with our family and knew things about us, you know, and knew the previous cats. And with him, we got brand new animals after that. And of course, we still remember, obviously, but like it was very interesting to look at it from a pet perspective, because you don't typically think of them as like, I don't know how to describe what I'm trying to say, but like I would do that with my family. It's like, oh, I knew my great grandmother. That's super cool. But you don't think about that with cats. But in reality, he had been with us in some way or another for 25 years or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing with dog ears is that like, yeah, if they are going to die well before us and we know that, their lifespan is encapsulated in the amount of time that we spend as conscious beings, and you can do that two or three times with animals, which is wild.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thank you for indulging me in that little conversation. I don't know why I thought about that, but I man, do I ever get sad when I throw rocks into the ocean sometimes.
That's a good way to sum it up.
When I anthropomorphize rocks, Cameron, I tend to call them Geodude.
Or Rockington.
I was about to say, you actually literally anthropomorphized rocks. Yeah,
I feel like I was really boring. I definitely used Rocky more than once.
Rocky, yeah. Rockington, Rocksters. Well, that's not quite an hour. Anyone else want to talk
that
about something?
It feels kind of like an ending, though. Does anyone have something A, extremely funny, B, extremely poignant, or C, absolutely pointless? Because I will accept any of them.
I'm always happy to just, like, pay you all a compliment because I like you all so much.
All right, Ben, you can end this episode by paying us all a compliment.
But you have to compliment one of us. You have to insult someone else. And you have to say a sort of ambiguous statement about the third person.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. We'll save the insult for last. We're going to go with, I guess, the compliment first and then the neutral second. All right. So compliment first. Steven, you make us funny. Thanks for doing that. Brian, you are just a host of this podcast.
Thank you, I am. Okay, good job on the mediocre one.
Cameron, you like Blaziken.
Oh! Ben brought
it home! I'm just ending it there. Yeah. Ben, that was beautiful.
Oh my god.
God, that was a lot of pressure.
That was
oh my god.
Funny, extremely pointless, and the third thing that I wanted.